Hi, we're Josh
and Arielle Wamsley,
owners of Green Valley Tree LLC, based in North Windham.
We're proud to sponsor Connecticut East this week and to serve the communities of Windham and New London counties with our tree removal and plant healthcare services.
Visit our website at greenvalleytreeworks.com for a full list of our services or give us a call on 860-234-4041. We look forward to hearing from you.
Blocking access to affordable drugs, what Big Pharma is doing to low-income patients in Connecticut. And summer may be drawing to a close, but four of the state's eight counties are on a Stage 2 drought watch. Plus, a look at other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott Smith. Every day it seems we hear stories about people who cannot afford life-saving medication and drugs in this country. And if you're on a low income, getting those medications can be even more difficult, especially when the manufacturers keep raising the prices. Recently, State Senator Richard Blumenthal, State Senator Matt Lesser, and State Representative Sean Scanlon held a press conference in Middletown to demand action from the big pharmaceutical companies to stop what they are calling illegal activity when it comes to a drug pricing program called 340B.
So good afternoon and welcome. I'm Yvette Highsmith-Francis, Regional Vice President with Community Health Center, Inc., and I'm delighted this afternoon to welcome Senator Blumenthal, Senator Lesser, Representative Scanlon, and Representative Phipps. And we thank you for your efforts to stop drug manufacturers from severely limiting access to affordable medications through the 340B pricing program. Their actions will destroy one of the most effective federal programs, making financial resources available to underserved communities. As Connecticut's largest federally qualified health center, CHC cares for more than 150,000 patients from nearly every town and city across the state. Most of our patients are poor, disproportionately from communities of color, and medically at risk due to chronic conditions such as diabetes. For many, medications such as insulin are a lifeline, and access to that lifeline is provided to them via the 340B program. The heartless actions by drug manufacturers will result in our patients paying significantly more for essential medications or not being able to afford those medications at all. This is just another burden for individuals who are already struggling to make ends meet. In the last 12 months, 4,600 of our uninsured and underinsured patients filled 27,700 prescriptions under this 340B program. In addition to diabetes, the most commonly filled prescriptions were those treating high blood pressure, asthma, depression, and opioid addiction. Today, we call on Congress and HRSA to block the drug manufacturers from effectively killing a program of critical importance to people across Connecticut and the nation. Thank you, Senator Blumenthal, for your efforts and advocacy on this issue and for your continued support of health centers. We look forward to your remarks.
I'm really proud to be here again because the great professionals and staff of this health center have been instrumental in saving lives and enhancing lives all throughout the Middletown area and the 17 federally qualified health centers around the state are the backbone, literally the backbone of our healthcare system in Connecticut. What is happening here, unfortunately, is one more instance of Big Pharma, the major pharmaceutical drug companies, trying to profiteer at the expense of our most vulnerable people in Connecticut and around the country. Most people have never heard of the 340B program, nor should they. Essentially, it is the program that provides for discounted prices of key drugs to go to people who need them most and who can least afford to pay for them. This program is the reason why certain pharmaceutical drugs are made affordable and accessible, like insulin, for people who otherwise would have to forego food on the table or paying their rent or clothing their children. It is a matter of economic survival for the people who benefit from this program known as 340B. Well, the pharmaceutical drug companies simply want to make more money. Why are they breaking the law to block needy people from having the drugs they need? To make more money. It's really that simple. They are demanding data from them that they don't need, simply to impose a burden. They are threatening to block discounted sales of drugs simply because those health clinics and hospitals are using contract pharmacy. The legislature voted 35, the Senate 35 to 1, and the House also overwhelmingly, to deal with the price of insulin. This practice thwarts the will of our state legislature, which is to make insulin and other drugs available and accessible. So I am joining, in fact, leading a letter with colleagues to the pharmaceutical drug companies, and we're also going to pressure the administration to make sure that the drug companies are stopped. They must be stopped from breaking the law and blocking access to discounted essential drugs. These drugs are not a luxury or convenience. They are life-saving drugs like insulin that patients cannot say they don't need because they desperately do need them. And my hope is that Connecticut, through the leadership of the men and women in our legislature, and three of the leaders are standing with me today, will say no to Big Pharma, no to their blocking access to vital drugs, no to their breaking the law, which is what they are doing. And I was outraged to hear about this practice directly from the clinics. They're the reason I got involved. They told me about what the pharmaceutical drug companies are doing in a conversation, one of the periodic conversations I had with them recently. And I'm going to stand four square with the patients, the doctors, the health clinics and hospitals of Connecticut, and with the great legislators we have with us today, Sean Scanlon and Matt Lesser, the heads of our insurance committee, and also with Representative Phipps. Thank you for being here today as well. And we're in Middletown, so Matt.
First of all, thank you, Senator Blumenthal, for always being there for Connecticut's consumers, for coming to Middletown, for being on top of this issue, for understanding it. You know, we're here today, and I wish we could. I mean, we're going into a holiday weekend when people really would love to focus on other issues, on cookouts, on families, on barbecues, and instead we have to warn about a new and terrible threat to Connecticut's families, to families all across the country. We already knew that the prescription drug industry had a problem in this country. Americans are paying the highest prescription drug prices in the world. But apparently that wasn't enough for the drug industry, and that's why one company after another has announced new policies in the last few weeks targeting the poorest people in Connecticut, saying that a program established in 1992 to make prescription drugs affordable to people who otherwise couldn't afford it through community health centers, they are saying that they won't participate in that program. They are denying drugs to the poorest people in Connecticut, to folks who get their health care through federally qualified community health centers. I want to talk about two companies in particular. We're going to talk about Sanofi and Eli Lilly. Together, those companies made $80 billion in revenue last year. They are some of the largest companies in the world. And yet, that isn't enough. And both of those companies, together are two out of the three companies that make insulin in America. So together, Sanofi and Eli Lilly are two out of three companies that make insulin. So if you are a type 1 diabetic, those are your options. And both companies have announced restrictions on 340B pricing in violation of federal law. Let me be very clear. Federal law says if you participate in the Medicaid program, you also have to participate in the 340B program. So what these companies are doing with these new policies is in violation of the law. When Sean and I set out on the mission to try to help people who are type 1 diabetics this year, we looked around to see what was working and what wasn't working. And the consistent refrain, what we heard from a lot of people, was that one of the few places you could go for affordable prescription drugs was to your local community health center. We heard stories about how community health centers are saving lives. So what we did as part of SB 1, passing the strongest insulin law anywhere in the country, was trying to take this program that's working, that's saving lives, and make it even more accessible, open it up to more folks. What the prescription drug industry is doing by erecting roadblocks for people to access affordable prescription drugs isn't just preventing us from expanding the program. It's taking away the discounts that people already have. It's saying that if you're poor in Connecticut, if you get your health care at this health center or at health centers across the state, you're going to have to pay the full book price. That means thousands of dollars in some cases that people don't have for life-saving essential medications like insulin. I heard from Eli Lilly this morning, and they said, whoa, 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 you're going too fast there, Senator Lesser. All we're saying is we're going to raise prices on every prescription drug except insulin. Well, I don't know if that's true or not, but if that is true, that's also outrageous. The fact of the matter is prescription drug prices are way too high in the United States. We should be lowering them, not raising them, and the greed of these companies is outrageous. I hope they rethink their policies and would urge the Trump administration to aggressively enforce federal law. I'd also like to bring up my friend, Representative Sean Scanlon, who is my co-chair on the Insurance and Real Estate Committee.
Thank you, Senator Lesser. We're here today with a very simple message to these companies. Do not put profits over people. Do not risk lives. The folks that get their health care here and across this country and across this state that rely on the 340B program, you are jeopardizing their lives in the middle of the most deadly pandemic this country has faced in a century. At a time when we have an economic crisis, where nearly a quarter of a million people in our state today are still unemployed. We have thousands upon thousands upon thousands more that are underemployed. And yet you are taking away the program that has helped them afford the astronomically expensive drugs that you are providing to them. Healthcare is a human right in this country. I believe that in all of my heart. And by doing what they're doing today, they are jeopardizing that human right in the middle of a pandemic. And so I join with Senator Blumenthal and my colleague, Senator Lesser, in calling on the federal government to enforce this law. I call on these companies to have a heart, to stop what they're doing. Don't require the federal government to slap you on the wrist and tell you you can't do it. You should proactively not be doing this. And we want to make sure that to the people of Connecticut that are sitting watching this news, as Senator Lesser said, on what should ordinarily be a very good weekend where they're sort of celebrating the end of summer, talking about their kids going back to school. We don't need to give the people of Connecticut one more thing to worry about at a time they're already worrying about a heck of a lot of stuff. And by getting rid of this program, they are going to put a massive amount of stress on thousands of Connecticut families that are just trying to survive in this very difficult time. So please, on behalf of the people that we represent, do not do this. Stop putting profits over people. And do the right thing and repeal this terrible decision and make sure that everyone in Connecticut and across the United States continues to have access to affordable drugs.
We've had a hot summer this year, and although summer is all but over, the state is dealing with drought conditions in four of the eight counties. So just how bad is it? So joining me is Eric Lindquist, who's an environmental analyst for the state of Connecticut. Eric, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure.
So you are one member of many of what's called the Connecticut Interagency Drought Workshop. Explain to us what that is.
state work group comprised of five state agencies, right? So it's the State Office of Policy and Management, which leads the group, Agriculture, Emergency Services and Public Protection, Energy and Environmental Protection, and Public Health. And so all of those agencies together comprise the Interagency Drought Work Group, which is convened when we experience dry or drought conditions in the state.
Now, I understand that the state actually adopted a new drought plan back in 2018. I'm sure there's many, many reasons as to why they did that. But in a nutshell, you know, why did the state decide to come up with a new plan? And I think it sort of like also sort of like changes some of the wording that was previously used by the state as well.
Right. So going way back, I'll just go way back to the beginning. We had Connecticut, this is actually before my time, in the early 80s, had a pretty serious drought event. And there were some major issues with the way the state was able to handle that event. The state really wasn't prepared for a drought of that magnitude. The previous drought, actually the worst drought on record in Connecticut, occurred in the 60s. And then, you know, a slightly less significant drought in the 80s, but still significant enough that the state said, you know, we need to do better for the next time this happens. And an independent drought task force was created that was under executive power to monitor conditions, issue recommendations to the governor, and so forth. And then it wasn't until 1999 that the state really recognized the need to develop really kind of more formal operating procedures to improve the function and effectiveness and predictability of drought response in the state. And so that task force was established as the Interagency Drought Work Group, or the IDW, and it's that collection of agencies that I talked about earlier. That group has existed since, you know, the early 2000s when they crafted the state's first ever drought management plan. That plan was adopted in 2003 and lived all the way until 2018 when a revised version of that plan was adopted, and that's the plan that we're going by today.
Now, one thing I want to say to you, and again, we don't want to alarm people, but you know, when we hear the word drought, we think the worst. But let's be clear, we're in what's called a stage two drought condition. What does that actually mean in reality?
So a stage two drought, first and foremost, there's five stages of the drought plan. So we're in stage two of five. And actually, the first stage isn't even a publicly advertised stage of drought. It's really an internal stage, a heads-up stage, if you will, for public officials to come together, start communicating, recognizing that conditions are dry, and getting communication and monitoring capabilities stepped up. And then at stage two, which is really the first publicly announced stage of drought, is when we go out and we put out, you know, pretty soft public messaging, just sort of alerting the public. It's really an advisory, right? So conditions are dry. Certain water suppliers may be strained depending on, you know, where rain has been falling and so forth. You know, we may be seeing agricultural impacts, some fire pond drying up. Those folks who have perhaps private wells, whether they may be shallow wells or bedrock wells that struggle when conditions are dry, you know, we want those folks to be in tune. It's really, you know, at that point, it's a voluntary step. We're asking for voluntary conservation with a specific focus on, you know, avoiding waste. We don't want to see unnecessary waste at this point. If conditions continue to be dry and we go further into drought, we want to be prepared. So, you know, wasteful outdoor watering, leaving hoses running for no reason, watering lawns that really don't need to be watered, things of that nature, you know, fixing leaky pipes, plumbing. And this doesn't go just for residents, but businesses as well. And we would just kindly ask folks to be cognizant and aware. There's no alarm, no need for alarm at this stage. It's really an early step. We're not at a point where we need to really kind of, you know, batten down the hatches, if you will, and really, you know, kind of tighten the belt on our water use. But avoiding unnecessary waste is really where we're at right now.
Yeah, I think a point to make here, I mean, you know, I've got a lawn at my house like many people. I don't water the lawn because, one, I don't need it to look like a golf course, but I know many people sort of like seem to think that they have to water their lawn. And I'm not asking you to comment on this. I'm going to make this comment myself. We all know that lawns come back. So, you know, people, if you're listening to this, your lawn will come back. Don't worry about watering it, you know, every 5 minutes. One of the other things I wanted to put to you, Eric, is that we should take this seriously, of course. Like you said, we're not trying to be alarmist about this, but you know, we should all be into water conservation year round.
That's absolutely right, Brian. You know, conservation should always be in our minds. We should always avoid unnecessary waste of water, you know, only use as much water as absolutely needed. I think, again, the point to drive home, the type of use that really puts the biggest strain on our supplies is the outdoor watering, right? And it's not just residential, but business as well. I mean, even water used to wash cars for car washes or for golf courses. Obviously, farmers need irrigation for some crops. That's necessary. But it's all about striking balance, right? So, you know, we want to make sure we're only using as much water as we need so that other uses aren't strained, and especially ecological uses, such as, you know, water that's necessary for fish or for amphibians and other wildlife.
Now, interestingly, the Interagency Drought Workshop has, you know, applied the stage two drought conditions to the four northern counties here in Connecticut out of the eight. So we're talking about Litchfield and Hartford, and of course, for eastern Connecticut, Tolland and Windham. Are you able to tell us why specifically the top four have been sort of like put into the stage two condition?
Yeah, absolutely. So this gets really sort of to the work of the Interagency Drought Work Group, right? So we have technical experts that are part of the group. We get together on, it has been biweekly, but a lot of times it'll be a monthly basis or an as-needed basis to review conditions, data that comes in. A lot of our data that we review are monthly, but some data is weekly or biweekly. And, you know, I won't go through all the indicators that we look at unless you want me to, because it's an extensive list. But the drought plan, which is available online, kind of reviews the data and indicators that the group looks at and when it makes a determination as to what stage of drought a particular region of the state is in. And it just so happens that this year, this summer, you know, we've had a combination of things hit us. And that's, you know, we've had a couple flash drought situations, which is a period of low rainfall combined with excessive heat. That's a bad combination. And that leads to conditions that deteriorate much more rapidly than we would otherwise be, you know, ready for, if you will. Drought tends to be, you know, unlike a tornado or a hurricane, it tends to be a very slowly developing event that takes, you know, months, if not years, to develop. But this year in particular, we saw a flash drought situation occur, particularly in the northern counties, where rainfall was actually a little less than in the southern counties, which then led to our drought indicators, you know, giving us flags that conditions in those parts of the state were more precarious than in the southern part of the state, especially Fairfield County. Fairfield County has been the outlier. It really has been, other than a little bit of dryness at the beginning of summer, it has been close to normal conditions. A lot of our indicators for Fairfield are good. And it's really northern, and now at this point, extending into actually New London County as well, New London and Middlesex County that are feeling the brunt of it. So the northern tier, over into the east, looking at a little worse conditions than the rest. And that's why the northern counties are in stage two versus stage one.
Summer, of course, officially sort of ends towards the end of September. But I suppose the point to make, and you've made it already about obviously heat and lack of rain, is even as we head into sort of like the cooler months, we could still continue to have a drought, one, if we don't have enough rain and other precipitation like snow. I mean, we've had relatively mild winters as well. I'm assuming that even sort of like the lack of snowfall can also impact water here in the state and therefore keep us in sort of like a semi-drought condition as well.
Absolutely, Brian. And, you know, it's something that people really don't think about, because when it comes down to it, people really feel the effects of a drought in the summer months, right? When there's all these competing demands for water. It's when water is its most valuable. We want water to water our gardens and to water lawns and to swim in, and the fish need it and the trees need it and plants. And we have high evaporation rates because of the heat. And then in the wintertime, really, our demand for water drops precipitously, right? So especially in certain parts of the state, we see incredible drops in demand through the fall, you know, between September through October into November. It is shocking the amount of water that we use during the summer compared to the winter. And we tend to forget about it. Therefore, we tend to forget that we may be in a drought heading into fall and heading into winter when trees start to go dormant and outdoor water use is really, you know, tuning down. People are turning off their outdoor watering sprinklers and so forth. And it's forgotten about for all intents and purposes, but it is the case that a drought can and has in the past continued to rage on through the winter, and then come the following spring, when things are starting to warm up again, leave us in an even worse position than we were heading into that fall. So it is something that we have to continue to keep an eye on through the winter, even though we don't tend to feel the effects or see it like we would in the summertime.
Well, Eric, it's been great talking to you. Thanks ever so much for helping us understand, you know, what the Interagency Drought Workshop does and why it was formed. And obviously that, the very important resource, which again, you know, we all take so much for granted when we turn on our taps, obviously does have to be looked after and we do have to conserve it. I understand that tips on water saving measures can be found on the Department of Public Health's website. We will share that information with our listeners. But in the meantime, Eric, to you and the rest of the Drought Workshop team, ever so many thanks. And thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
And you can find tips on water saving measures on the Department of Public Health's website at ct.gov/DPH.
Green Valley Tree LLC is proud to sponsor Connecticut East This Week. Contact Green Valley Tree LLC for all your tree removal and plant health care needs and more. Find us at greenvalleytreeworks.com or call 860-234-4041.
Time now for a look at some of the other stories making the headlines in the region recently. In the Connecticut Examiner, as the Connecticut Insurance Department deliberates over whether to allow insurance premiums to increase for 2021, health insurers pushed back against reports of large profits during the pandemic as premature. The New York Times reported that many of the large insurance companies that serve Connecticut, including Aetna, Anthem, and United Healthcare, reported second quarter earnings that were double what they earned in the previous year. Insurers, however, are predicting that these earnings will be offset by a coming increase in elective surgeries and treatments postponed due to the pandemic. In the day this week, 64-year-old Michael Schaefer still thinks there's more to uncover about the worst submarine disaster in U.S. history, which killed all 129 men aboard, including his father and uncle. Last month, the Navy notified Schaefer and other descendants of the crew of the USS Thresher that it is reviewing all of its records related to the loss of the submarine 57 years ago and is seeking to declassify and release as much information as possible under federal law. On April 10, 1963, the USS Thresher sank 220 miles east of Cape Cod, killing everyone on board. In the Norwich Bulletin, Plainfield Town officials and state legislators gathered at the town hall recently to celebrate the reintroduction of a public bus service after 22 years without one. First Selectman Kevin Cunningham opened the proceedings, saying this was a missing piece of Plainfield. The Northeastern Connecticut Transit District's new Orange Line makes several stops throughout Plainfield and connects already established bus lines to the north and south. In the Middletown Press this week, a proposal to bring a methadone treatment center to a busy section of Route 66 is drawing mixed reactions from some business owners who oppose it and those who see it as a need to combat opioid addiction. Several local business owners said they oppose the proposal for the methadone treatment center because they are concerned it could impact their businesses. The Hartford Dispensary, doing business as the Root Center for Advanced Recovery based in Manchester, will be seeking a special zoning exception from the Planning and Zoning Commission for a change of use to 392 Washington Street to a substance abuse clinic. In the Chronicle this week, the University of Connecticut is launching a new testing approach to allow significantly more students to be tested for COVID-19 at the same time. At the store's campus, non-symptomatic students will continue to be randomly selected to participate in surveillance testing by Student Health and Wellness. Non-symptomatic testing will be conducted over a three-day period at the South Campus tent and from September 14th to November 20th at the Fieldhouse. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at connecticut-east.com or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East, where you can also listen to the show again on demand. And please like, follow and share on your social media platforms too. I'm Brian Scott-Smith. Thank you for listening.